Fisher is called to order. It's 2:20, and it's the 3rd of May, and we have five items on the agenda, and we're just going to work our way down and get to as many as we can, and then we'll go ahead and recess to the call of the chair. We don't think, we're not sure if we're going to be able to meet tomorrow. We're thinking it might not be till Thursday because Labor and Commerce is to take up the workers' compensation bill, and then there's a rules committee meeting that comes at the same time. But I'll go ahead and recess in the event that there's a time that works out. So we're going to start with...
Thanks for me getting that.
Well, good. First, we're going to go to the confirmation hearing for the Commission on Judicial Conduct, Mr. Jerry Story. The next is Senate Bill 101, the revisers bill again. Then SJR 12 by Senator Terrio, Senate Bill 154 by Senator Terrio, and House Bill 193 by the governor. Okay, so without further ado, Mr. Story, who's been waiting patiently on the line, are you there?
I'm here.
Tell us why you want to be on the Council for Judicial Conduct.
Well, one of my responsibilities as an assistant superintendent of a school district was to basically ensure that the due process, i.e. the rights and responsibilities, be followed in every case involving any of the legalities in the school district. And I felt that that's not only morally desirable, but in terms of our kind of increasing legalistic society, it's a survival skill that administrators and all staff had to be competent in. And in that process, I also provided that kind of same in-service for all the internal and external publics of the district as needed. And so I feel very committed to due process rights and others, and this is one of the reasons that I'm interested in the Judicial Conduct Board. And although the aforementioned rights and responsibility due process isn't exactly the same as the mission of the Commission on Judicial Conduct, I really feel there are some equating parallels of it. Another thing is that I did pull off the web the mission and procedures of the board, and I kind of recognize that the mission of the board is a fairly dynamic process, and it looks to me that it's periodically being revised and amended and sometimes possibly challenged and even interpreted. And so I do realize that I have a learning curve to accomplish in a task like this if I'm appointed, and feel confident that I'm up to that task on it. I am retired, and I felt a desire to serve the state, kind of give back, and on some kind of a board or commission, and when I was found out that there was an opening on this commission, that's why I applied.
Great. Questions for Mr. Story? Got a quiet committee today. Well, thank you for your willingness to serve.
Well, I thank you for the opportunity, Representative McGuire, and we'll look forward to hearing from you one way or the other.
Okay, thank you very much.
You bet.
Okay, well, we've got the joint session. I guess it's tomorrow. So, if somebody wants to make
Thursday
the motion,
at 11.
Thursday at 11, Representative Dahlstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move that we move the name of Mr. Jerry Story for the Commission on Judicial Conduct from this committee to the full body, making note that moving it from the body doesn't mean anyone is voting yay or nay. We have just agreed to move it from this committee.
Okay, are there any objections to moving Mr. Story's name out? Hearing none, Mr. Story's name is moved on now to the full body. Okay, and so that brings us to the revisers bill, House Bill 101. Any questions that folks might have?
Lisa.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative.
I was the only one that had a question. I talked to Mr. Crawford. My question's answered. I'm no further problem with the bill.
Any further questions on the revisers bill? Representative Kira.
Madam
Sure. There were some issues that we had talked about, and I just wanted to hear your responses.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. Through the Chair, for purposes of review, Representative Guerra had some questions relating to removal of reference to the Bureau of Indian Affairs in some of the sections in Title 14. And the will of the committee was that I check with the Department of Education to make sure that, doubly sure, that they didn't have any concerns with removal of references from various statutes. And Representative Guerra's question focused on the ability of the Department of Education and Early Development to contract with Bureau of Indian Affairs with respect to the costs of costs relating to boarding schools. Unfortunately, I'm still waiting to hear back from the department. So what I might propose for the committee's consideration is that the committee considering adopting a conceptual amendment that removes those sections that deal with the Bureau of Indian Affairs from the bill, and that when I do hear back from the department, if it is still the department's view that removal of those references is appropriate, that I simply move roll those amendments over into next year's revisor's bill. I think that that's a good way to proceed, A, because it's a very conservative approach with respect to the revisor's bill, which is appropriate, and B, there really isn't any sort of time pressure to get these particular references out of the statutes. So rolling these sorts of amendments over into next year's revisor's bill really doesn't present any problem that I'm aware of. And hopefully that will give both the members of the committee and the members of the House a degree of comfort about what's going on in the 2005 revisor's bill.
Fantastic. Okay, so do you hear amendments?
Madam Chair, I will move a conceptual amendment to delete the sections that address the reference of the Bureau of Indian Affairs so that we leave those references in the law until the revisor is confident that we should take them out.
Madam Chair.
Section 25 and 26?
That's a few sections, Madam Chair.
Okay.
Madam Chair, the sections are 25, 26, 28, and one of the sections in Bill Section 91, which is the repealer.
Okay. Representative Gruenberg.
Through the chair. Mr. Crawford, if this bill is on the floor in the next day or so, do you think you'll have an answer by then?
I honestly don't know the answer to your question.
Because if you do, I would ask that you contact the chair or myself, whichever you prefer, with a proposed amendment, and we can add it back in on the floor.
I'll be more than happy to do that.
Okay, so there's a motion on the table. Amendment 1 to strike the strikes of referencing the Bureau of Indian Affairs in the revisor's bill to allow for a more thorough analysis. Is there an objection to that motion?
I withdraw my objection.
Okay, the objection is withdrawn. Any further objection? Okay, hearing none, conceptual amendment number 1 carries. Any further amendments to this? Okay. Is there a motion? Representative Dahlstrom.
Madam Chair, I'd move the CS for Senate Bill 101, version I, with conceptual amendment number 1 attached, fiscal note and individual recommendations.
Okay, is there any objection to that motion? Hearing none, House Bill number 101 as amended has moved. Thank you, Mr. Crawford.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, so that brings us to SJR 12. And we have Mr. Sandcliffe here, who has been very patient, the chair of this committee. Welcome to House Judiciary for the fifth and final time.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dave Stanford, and I'm staff to Senator Cherryall. And you have before you a resolution that, in its original form, sought an expeditious confirmation of judges, and that seemed a bit too politically flavored, and in the other body of the judiciary, it was changed to simply ask for expeditious vote up or down for the nominees that are before Congress. And the resolution is pretty straightforward. There would be some differences of opinion, I'm sure, based on some of the language. For instance, Madam Chairman, the reference to dilatory actions, I think, again, is an attempt to stay away from the word filibuster, and it's an open policy call as to whether or not people feel that those typical procedures that have been used are constitutional, what the history is, and so forth. I think the resolution overall before you just seeks to get some final, I guess, action up or down from the Senate on these judicial nominees. And we realize and want to put on the record that our folks back in Washington are going to look at this in various ways and use their best judgment on what's best for the state of Alaska in the political process, and this in no way, shape, or form is to supersede their judgment whatsoever. But it's just a statement that is getting more coverage that people want to see the process move forward. And that's about all I would be willing to say as far as the sponsor. I would try to answer any questions if there were any, and the rest is up to the committee.
Thank you very much. Okay, Mr. Stancliffe, is there anyone here in the audience that wishes to testify on SJR 12? Is there anybody online? Okay, hearing none, public testimony is closed on HJR 12. It brings the Senate Joint Resolution back before us for committee discussion. Questions? Comments? Sure. Representative Gruenberg.
I take great offense, both personally and as a member of the Democratic Party and as a respecter, a former staffer on the to the U.S. Senate, to Senator Stevens, as a matter of fact, to term what the senators have done in this particular case as a dilatory tactic. This is not in this type of thing when the filibuster was used to block civil rights or things like that. This was, as a practical matter, in my opinion, an attempt to make certain that the people who are going to have lifetime appointments to the federal bench really are the best people, in the sense that they're not adopting a political agenda but a judicial approach that is fair and balanced. And the filibuster is, in some senses, like the three-quarter vote for the CBR. It's a check and a balance that the minority has. And for a long time, the Republicans were in a minority there. For a while, the Southern Democrats were, et cetera, et cetera. But it's been used to make certain that legislation has a broad-based consensus. Not always. Sometimes it has been used dilatorily. But I think in this particular case, it wasn't. And cannot say I support this resolution, but it would make it a lot more palatable to me if the whereas clause on lines 2 and 4 on page 2 was deleted. I don't have a problem with working with the language here, but I do think that language is political, and it does inflame the situation. And I would call the chair and the body's attention to Mason's manual, section 761, with which we're familiar, that says that 760, which says that we are not to comment on what is done in the other house, because the opinion of each house should be independent and not influenced by the proceeding of the other. Now, the U.S. Senate is not the other house, but the principle is the same, that the Senate of the United States and the Senate of New York and the Assembly of California, they all conduct their business independently of the Alaska State House. So I think that we should not be commenting on their rules of procedure there. And for that reason, I would move that we strike page 2, lines 2 to 4, that whereas. And I'd offer that as an amendment, Madam Chair.
I'll object.
Okay, there's an objection. You want to speak to your objection, Representative Cockhill?
Yeah, I think that there's probably some, and I can appreciate the offense taken
But I do agree that the tactics taken are meant to delay confirmations. That's been a huge debate. And I think there's a recognition on our part, at least on my part, if I'm going to be a part of this resolution, I would like to send a language saying that those tactics being what they are, we would still like confirmation process to go forward based on a majority. And the way I understand their tradition, that this is the first time this has been used for the last 2 years anyway, has been the first that has been used in history as a delay tactic. So I'd be willing to take the word dilatory out, but I still think just you know, like I would say that the recognition that there is a partisan debate on this issue is so self-evident, I don't think we have to put any adjectives on it at all. So I would be willing to entertain, instead of striking the whole thing out, just as use tactics to prevent a Senate floor vote and just take the word dilatory out of there.
Well, Madam Chair, if I may
respond,
and I think we need maybe a little dialogue on this. I don't think that, it certainly would make it more palatable to me to take the word dilatory tactic out. I would certainly not oppose that kind of a concept. I'm wondering whether that paragraph could maybe be phrased a little. Well, look, I guess the problem I have here is that some of the nominees, and I don't know enough about the nominees to go into, we're not here to debate the nominees of some federal court somewhere else. I mean, that is just, this is kind of an unusual resolution because it's not the kind of thing we get into. We don't have any, I don't have enough knowledge to really go into. But
Representative Krakow?
Just an appeal to the representative. Certainly a recognition that there is a debate there, a partisan debate. I'm willing to drop the adjectives.
That.
If you're willing to allow us to at least acknowledge the fact that they're using tactics that that there's a battle based on some tactical move.
Well, I think that, see, if we start talking about dilatory tactics, then, as I understand it, there is a tactic that the other party, political party, is using to not allow the filibuster to proceed, the potential filibuster, which is, that tactic is also unprecedented. Both parties are going down an uncharted way, and it's the kind of thing that maybe ought to be an object lesson to us around here. It's what happens when the parliamentary war escalates out of control. And you're the majority leader, I have been. We have a former speaker here on the committee, and we have a lot of people who have a lot of experience. And I am not going to hold the bill up. I don't think I'm going to support the bill, but I'm not going to hold the bill up. But what I would like, at least, is not to go down the road of a mini nuclear war on this bill. And if we can keep it as nice as possible, it'll make it a nicer bill and make me nicer.
I think that's fair. And I think Representative Coghill makes a good point. I would recommend either removing dilatory or altogether or saying delay. Either way, that's more of an objective analysis than dilatory. Dilatory is a critical word and implies a particular belief about the type of actions. But I do think you need the clause in. Otherwise, none of it makes any sense.
Madam Chair,
Representative,
might be helpful if we were to say the threat of a filibuster on the one hand. But if you're going to go down that road, then, or whatever, then it might be that we would have to say, what the other side is doing.
I don't want to get into that.
Yeah, and I don't know. I don't want to get into all that whole thing.
So Representative Gruenberg, your motion on the table right now would be to strike lines 2 through 4 on page 2. Do you maintain that motion?
Well, without making this a career, is there a way we can phrase this clause in a positive way that might get us, and I didn't think this thing through, but maybe some way that there is a desire to see a resolution with a floor vote in a fair, I don't know.
Representative Cockhill?
Actually, the resolve part of it is that we're asking that that body move quickly to a majority floor vote. So both sides have, one wants to change the rules one way, one wants to bend the rules another way. No doubt about it, there are tactics being used on both sides. So this one is the charge that the filibuster is a tactic. It puts the word dilatory on it. But there's no doubt the facts are it is a minority, it is a tactic, and I have no problem saying that.
Well,
so do you want to just take an up or down vote on yours, Representative Gruenberg? I want to get moving.
Okay, how
on.
About this? How about if we change the word dilatory tactic, say the rules of the Senate?
Well, I don't know that that's true.
Well, they are. The filibuster is part of the rules of the Senate.
I think that's part of their debate, and I don't know that we want to enter into it.
Madam Chair?
Pardon me, Mr. Stankler.
I think it would be helpful for the committee to, of course, I've done a lot of reading in history, and without getting into what's occurred since 2003, we're in new ground, we're on new precedents, things are being done differently to a great higher degree of volume than ever before, and I think that's part of the concern. We could have used the word obstruct, and we did not use the word obstruct or obstruction. We used dilatory, and I think the sponsor would be comfortable with removing even that reference as in the spirit of compromise, Madam Chairman.
Representative Gruenberg, we still have to dispense with your amendment one way.
I will withdraw the amendment.
To amend your
I will
amendment.
Withdraw okay. the amendment
so
to
amendment number one is withdrawn.
Do you have any thoughts, Representative Guerra?
You do?
Representative Guerra?
Madam Chair, let me just understand the purpose of this bill by going back and forth with Mr. Stankler a couple times. Is that all right?
Yeah, and it's a House joint resolution. Thank you.
Mr. Stankler, I take it that it's not that you're trying to make fun of the Democratic Party or champion the Republican Party, but you don't like this practice regardless of who's doing it. Is that fair to say?
Be careful. I advise.
Let's just get it out.
The process is not working as it should with regard to final decisions by the full body of the Senate. The sponsor wants to urge that to happen. Regardless of who's controlling the Senate, who's in front of the Senate,
or who's the president,
that is irrelevant.
Okay, good. I've got a few amendments that'll just clean this bill up a little bit.
Okay, go ahead and offer them. See how they.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to move amendment number one.
Do you want to do it as two, just for the since we withdrew sure. amendment number one? Just for
I'm going to move amendment number one, which deals with the title. And the title right now says all nominations by President George W. Bush, but since we're not trying to favor one president over the other, I think what we should do is replace President George W. Bush with the words any president. So it says that the United States Senate on all nominations by any president to the United States Supreme Court. That's amendment number one, Madam Chair.
Jack.
Okay, amendment number two, actually. Is that okay?
Amendment number two.
Okay, and there's an objection. Okay, discussion? Representative Cockhill?
This goes to the president who has at present a ongoing battle getting nominations through Congress. It just happens to be President George Bush. He happens to be a Republican, which I tend to favor. I would like to keep that name in there.
And I guess my objection would just be Representative Guerra, whoever succeeds President Bush, whomever that person is, You are free to, Representative Gruenberg's free to, I'm free to draft a resolution if we're still here, On the same notion, should that be the case. But, I mean, I think the point is, I don't even know who reads these resolutions, to be completely honest with you. I don't know if anyone does. But if they did, I think the point is to get it to this president on this particular subject right now. Representative Garrett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just in closing, I don't think anybody outside of this building is going to read this resolution. Perhaps maybe somebody in the press, and maybe, but nobody after that. And actually, Eric Croft once had a very interesting suggestion on the annual ANWR resolution, which is, we're doing one, this is it, we're never doing it again, we'll save the postage. And
we'll let you know if we change our mind.
So the advantage of saying any president is so we don't have to keep doing this. Next time, perhaps there's a Democrat in charge who wants to do a resolution to make fun of a Republican Congress, we'd save the postage and we'll just make this sort of politics neutral. So that's the point of Amendment number one.
Is the objection maintained?
Madam Chair,
Representative Gruenberg.
I wonder if, in the spirit of compromise, we could say, by President George W. Bush and any other president.
Representative Guerra, do you accept the friendly amendment?
I do.
Representative Coghill?
I still object.
Still objects. Okay, we can go round and round for another hour. Madam Secretary, will you call the roll on Amendment number 2, which has been amended to say President George W. Bush or any other president.
Representative McGuire.
No.
Representative Anderson is not here. Representative Coghill.
No.
Representative Cott.
No.
Representative Dahlstrom.
No.
Representative Gruenberg.
Yes.
Representative Guerra.
Yes.
2, yes, 4, no.
Amendment number 2 fails to carry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move Amendment number 3.
Okay.
If we would go to page 2. Line 7, I would like to delete President George W. Bush and insert the words any president. As we recall, the testimony on this bill was that we didn't want to make this party or president specific, that this is just a general practice we opposed. And so what that would read would be that we want the Senate to move quickly to a majority floor vote of the United States Senate on all nominations by any president to the United States Supreme Court, rather than just President George W. Bush's nominations to the United States Supreme Court. So that would be the amendment.
Objection. Representative Coghill, same reasons.
Madam Chair, we are, at the very least, if we're going to take our work seriously, we're sending a resolution that is going to speak to a subject that is very hotly debated right now. We're going to send it to those that we expect that they would at least hear from us. It would be even less worthwhile if we just say, we generally say, we just want you to kind of basically sort of listen to us sometime. So I think
on some subject
is appropriate.
I guess just in response,
Representative Guerra.
And Representative Coghill and Representative Coghill's point is a fair one. I think it's a fair point to say this is a resolution. Nobody's going to read it. It's not going to have a hoot of impact in Congress. And all we're doing with this resolution is offending a certain number of members of the legislature, perhaps just for a soundbite. And if we're going to go through this process of offending a certain number of legislators, then I think I, on behalf of those legislators, have every obligation to try and make this bill as neutral as possible so we can sort of avoid the acrimony of these that we could otherwise have this last week and a half for something that's just not that important.
Representative Kirko?
There is no offense meant to be given. It's meant to speak to a topic that is very hotly debated in Congress that many of us feel very strongly about. It is not meant to have a soundbite that is going to put one over on any other party, other than that we appreciate what the President has done and what the majority in the House and Senate of the Congress want to do. So that obviously is going to follow along party lines here, but it is not meant with disrespect, I can tell you that, for me and my vote.
Okay, Madam Secretary, please call the roll on Amendment number 3.
Representative McGuire.
No.
Representative Anderson is not here. Representative Coghill.
No.
Representative Cott.
No.
Representative Dahlstrom.
No.
Representative Gruenberg.
Yes.
Representative Guerra.
Yes.
2 yes, 4 no.
So amendment number 3 respectfully fails to carry.
And just one more
other
amendment.
Amendments, Representative Guerra.
Amendment number 4 would delete page 1, line 15 through page 2, line 1. I certainly understand those who believe that President Bush has expressed a commitment, as it says here, to appoint federal judges who will strictly interpret the United States Constitution, and people are free to express their opinion in that regard. My belief is that this president is trying to appoint federal judges who will support his political agenda, and so I guess I disagree with the statement. I'd like it taken out of the resolution.
Okay, amendment number four, objection,
Chair,
Representative Coghill.
With strong disagreement, there has been a political litmus test put on judges so long that when somebody is called upon to introduce or follow the Constitution in a strict constructionist manner, that it's not even accepted in our society today. So I strongly object.
A strong objection. Further discussion? Representative Cott?
No.
Okay. Madam Secretary.
Calling for the vote.
Just as an olive branch back to the representative next to me, Madam Chair. I think, you know, if you look at a judge's opinions, whether it's a liberal judge's or a conservative judge's opinions, if you find somebody who's got extreme politics, they're both activists. They're all activists. They're all sort of actively trying to push their own agendas, the ones on the fringes. And so I'm not willing to sort of pass a resolution that sort of casts my favor upon judicial nominees who I don't know, whose records I haven't
reviewed. Now, I'm going to remind both of you, you have to save your energy for the debate tonight.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I was going to say,
there have
been books written on this very topic, and we obviously are not going to agree.
With all due respect,
okay.
I know you both respect each other deeply. Okay, that being said, Madam Secretary, please call the roll on amendment number four.
Representative McGuire.
No.
Representative Anderson is not here. Representative Coghill.
No.
Representative Cox.
No.
Representative Dalton. No. Representative Broomberg.
Yes.
Representative Bureau.
Yes. I was going to go to sleep.
Yes, four. No.
Okay, further amendments to Senate Joint Resolution number 12.
Madam Chair.
Representative Gruenberg, number five. Amendment number five?
There's been quite a bit in the newspaper and the press by Senator Lisa Murkowski that she felt that certain groups were attempting to put pressure on her to vote a certain way on this. And she felt that was inappropriate. I happen to agree. I'm sure have felt the same way had the shoe been on the other foot, that political pressure should not have been put in this manner on any U.S. senator, particularly ours. And I see this resolution as being seen by some people, including potentially her, as that same kind of political pressure. I don't think we should be doing that. And for this reason, I do not think we should send this resolution to her. And I'm going to move to delete her name from the list here.
I object.
Okay, that's amendment number five.
Madam
Chair. Mr. Stancliffe, yeah, do you want to discuss, so that members know, the very reason that I held this bill over.
Absolutely.
Was to ascertain an opinion on that matter.
For the record, and I think it's important to know, the sponsor has contacted the senator and asked about these very concerns, because he is a person, as you know, who is not prone to launch. And in her editorial and her convictions, she plainly stated that she too desires for an expeditious and a full Senate process to happen. Okay. That having been said, she reserves all rights to make up her own mind and understands that pressures will come from various interest groups. And will make up her mind beyond the scope of anything they try to apply. And she was very comfortable moving ahead. We approached the chairman and asked if we couldn't move ahead with that in mind, and she granted this this hearing. So I think it's important that that be on the record, Madam Chairman.
May I inquire, Madam Chair?
Yeah, Representative Broomberg.
Briefly. Was she specifically asked whether she had any problem and felt this was undue pressure?
Yes, she was.
What did she say?
Certainly not. And
well, then I will remove my amendment, because that was an amendment that went to the edge of the envelope, and I wouldn't have done it if I hadn't been personally concerned for it.
Is there a way to put, you know, Mr. Stancliffe, the only other thought that I had at some point was, and I just, you know, I've had too many irons in the fire, but it would be nice to have a whereas clause that says, whereas we respect our delegations decisions with respect to how they support these nominations coming to a vote.
I think that would be an appropriate conceptual amendment if you'd feel comfortable with that, Madam Chairman.
Work with you on the language, but the idea being, you know, I'm not so worried about Lisa, but I am perhaps worried about her colleagues. And I wouldn't want, you know, I've had a personal conversation with her about this, and she's trying to look at everything. She's looking at Anwar and trying to get that through. She's got relationships that need to be preserved for various other reasons, and it's no different than the job we do here. It's difficult to just shine a microscope on one thing. And I wouldn't want a member to be able to wave this in her face and embarrass her. I think she's tough enough, and I absolutely know what she said, but it might be nice to say something in here, that a whereas clause, that we respect our delegation's individual decisions with respect to how they go about encouraging this to come to an up or down vote. Because I do think we need an up or down vote. I think that's critical. And if people want to vote against the judges, then do so. For the disagreements that Les and John have had, people are going to have differing opinions, but I don't think it's fair to simply say we're not going to have any vote at all, and I know Lisa agrees with that, but I just wouldn't want this to be used to embarrass her. So I guess I'll offer a conceptual amendment. It would be conceptual amendment, I guess, number 5, and I would work with the sponsor to come up with, but the general idea would be a whereas clause. It says that we respect our delegation's individual decisions about how it is that they will encourage an up or down vote on these judicial nominations. So that would be conceptual amendment number 5. Is there an objection to that, Representative Crockett?
Okay. And we've spent probably way too much time.
Help
on
me
that,
think so. Out loud too, I guess.
It's just that when you pick up the resolution as a congressman and you look at it, you might glance at the whereases, but you're really going to be looking at the resolved. The resolution here is to simply move quickly to a majority floor vote. We might be better off if we just put those in big, bold words. But I don't think any one of our members or any of the other members would be using this as a tool to embarrass anybody, Madam Chair. And I'm saying this with as much respect as I can. I think that it's added language that makes us look less resolved than them. And so my only concern would be and under Eric Croft's simple approach of looking at things, I might even ask us to put a good big stamp, move quickly for a majority vote, and just stamp it right on the front of this, because I think that would probably have the highest impact. So with all due respect, I don't know that we need that language, Madam Chair.
And then just with all due respect back, I mean, I guess I would have never thought that the kind of ads that have appeared would have appeared either. And that, in talking with Lisa, I was there on the day in D.C. when this happened. These individuals never even asked her opinion. They never even came to her and asked her opinion. And within days, there was a complete media blitz. And I don't care what people's opinions are, whether they're pro-life or pro-choice or pro-death penalty or anti-death penalty or whatever. It's a matter that we support and respect our delegation and the job that they're doing for us. And if we become so narrow-sighted on one thing and don't allow them to look at the broader picture, I think we're missing the boat. And I just would not want somebody with an agenda any one way or the other to be able to embarrass her under I don't know if they have the equivalent of special orders, but something like that. To say, look here.
So that I don't have to belabor the point. I'll remove my objection, but I just think it's not necessary.
Okay. So the objection's been withdrawn. Is there a further objection to it? Okay, hearing no objection, amendment number 5 carries. And Representative Guerra?
I don't want to interrupt you. I just want to make sure I got one last amendment.
Representative Guerra?
Amendment number 6, Madam Chair, and that would be to delete the two places where it says move quickly and replace them with the words "move thoughtfully." I don't think that, frankly, it's the Senate's constitutional role to rubber stamp a judge of president's nominees. I think it's their role to advise and consent, and I think that involves thoughtful deliberation, not just quick deliberation. So I think in other places in this resolution it talks about not slowing things down, but I don't think move quickly is an appropriate thing to tell the Senate to do.
I'll object. Amendment.
Representative Coghill.
Yes, I get to carry this from a senator.
Yes. Yosha.
Yeah. We want them to move quickly. To assume that they wouldn't move thoughtfully, I think, is disrespectful.
Here's an idea. Tell me if you think this does it. Representative Guerra, what if we said move quickly and deliberately? Probably won't accept that. But.
I know what you're trying to get to, but I don't think that does it. And I really apologize that we're going back and forth on a resolution nobody's going to read, but that's the price that gets paid when we hear bills like this. Oh. I mean, or when people push bills like this, and this is just a preview of what's going to happen on the House floor.
And I would echo Representative Coghill's objection on this one, because I do think they've had years now, and that there has been ample discussion and thought, and I do think now we're kind of getting to a crisis point. But I guess I would just say on the record, I hope that in acting quickly, they would also be deliberate and thoughtful. So, to the extent that matters. Mr. Stancliffe, did you want to say anything?
Well, I think that there is a sense of urgency that's been created because of the holdups that have gone on. It's a procedure that has been used very effectively to create that pushback. And so there is a sense of urgency, and quickly isn't perhaps a very artful term. If there were to be some compromise, it might be responsibly or something like that.
Well, I was wondering, Madam Chair. Madam Chair.
Representative Gruenberg.
How about, I was wondering if the maker of the amendment would be willing to substitute the word rather than thoughtfully, instead of quickly, responsibly.
I was nodding yes, but I think they should move thoughtfully. So that's just how I think they should do their job.
Okay.
Well, with all due
Gruenberg.
With all due respect, since the sponsor of the bill would accept the word responsibly, that would go a long way towards getting my support for this legislation. I would ask, well, I'm, out of due respect for Representative Guerra, if he wants to vote on his amendment, I'm not going to move to amend his amendment, but if it doesn't pass, I will offer the word responsibly.
Okay, so let's have a vote on Representative Guerra's amendment, which would be amendment number 6, inserting the word quickly, replacing it, pardon me, with thoughtfully. Madam Secretary, will you call the roll?
Representative McGuire.
No.
Representative Anderson is not here. Representative Cogdell.
No.
Representative Cott.
No.
Representative Dahlstrom.
No.
Representative Gruenberg.
Yes.
Representative Guerra.
Yes.
2 yes, 4 no.
So amendment number 6 fails to carry. Representative Gruenberg.
I would move on line 1, page 1, and again on line 6 of page 2 to replace the word quickly with the word responsibly.
Object.
There's an objection. Representative Coghill.
When I played basketball in high school, I had a coach that told me, be quick, but don't get in a hurry. What he meant was, be quick, but don't get in a hurry. In other words, pick your shot and make it. I think we're asking them to be quick. Doesn't mean we're asking them to be anything other than just quick. Be deliberate. Pick what you're going to do, get a majority vote, and be quick about it. The delay has been significant, and I think the word quick delivers exactly what I would want to put in there, and any other word, I think, falls short.
May I respond?
The discussion? Representative Gruenberg.
I think responsibly is a dignified term. I think it was acceptable to the sponsor. And we can then maybe dispose of this resolution deliberately, responsibly, and thoughtfully.
Representative Dahlstrom, do you have a thought?
I tend to agree with the comments by Representative Coghill, so I guess we'll probably need to take a vote.
Very good. So the question has been called, and we will take a vote on amendment number 7. Madam Secretary.
Representative McGuire.
No.
Representative Anderson is not here. Representative Coghill.
No.
Representative Cott.
No.
Representative Dahlstrom.
No.
Representative Ruenberg.
Yes.
Representative Guerra.
Yes.
2 yes, 4 no.
And I also failed to mention, Madam Secretary, that Representative Anderson is excused for work, labor and commerce stuff. My apologies about that.
Ready for a motion, Madam Chair?
I am. Representative Coghill.
Madam Chair, I defer.
Oh, Representative Dahlstrom.
Madam Chair, I'd like the CS for joint resolution number 21, version G, with attached...
amendments? As amended, and it's 12.
As amendment, or excuse me, as amended with attached fiscal note and individual recommendations.
Okay, motion.
Just very briefly, and
okay,
then I'll withdraw.
Okay, Representative Guerra, speaking to your objection.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I suppose all of us at some point are guilty of being partisan. I find this resolution over the top. I don't think that it's going to have any benefit of any sort, and it's only going to cause damage. And if we're going to go down this road, soon we're going to have resolutions that I'm going to ask, I think, for Senator Terrio's help on, maybe asking the President to reverse his decision to cut certain veterans' benefits, and things like that. Also resolutions that will have no impact whatsoever. It just invites more resolutions like this, and I just don't think it's a good road to go down. And I would just finally note that if we're really going to be fair about this, we would spend a lot of time in this resolution talking about how the Senate Republicans stood in the way of so many of President Clinton's nominees, not through the use of the filibuster, but through still a very unprecedented use of their advising consent power, also to block judicial nominees, and frankly, sort of what's good for the goose is good for the gander, and what's bad for the goose is bad for the gander. So I withdraw my objection.
Okay, Madam she withdrew his objection. Okay, so SJR 12, as amended with individual recommendations, will move out of this committee.
Thank you,
Mr. Stancliffe.
Members of the committee. It's American debate at its finest. Thank you.
Right. Okay, so next we have Senate Bill number 154. We're going to go ahead and start hearing. We have Heather. Is that right? Ms. Brakes? Ms. Brakes. Tell us about Senate Bill 154.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Heather Brakes, staff to Senator Terrio, who is the sponsor of Senate Bill 154. This bill addresses two concerns of juvenile justice in Alaska. The first improves the state's ability to hold juvenile offenders accountable for their conduct, and second, increases the efficiency of the juvenile justice system by allowing telephonic hearings in some court proceedings. Senate Bill 154 addresses a loophole in Alaska statutes that allows young offenders to avoid prosecution if their role in a crime is not discovered or charges have not been brought until after the offender becomes 18 years of age. Currently, when a person under 18 commits a delinquent act, the juvenile justice system is responsible for the matter. When a person over 18 commits a crime, the adult criminal system is responsible for prosecution. Recent court decisions have highlighted a loophole in the law. It occurs when a youth commits a delinquent act while under 18, but it's not discovered or proceedings are not filed until the person reaches 18. Neither the adult or juvenile system has clear jurisdiction. In your packets, you should have a couple of cases that I've flagged with blue post-it notes. There's some highlighted verbiage, and Director Patty Ware will go over those cases in more depth. This bill addresses the area of jurisdiction by providing that the delinquent minor statutes apply to a person who commits a crime while under 18 if the period of limitation for the crime has not expired. So in that respect, Madam Chair, the bill holds offenders accountable for their actions. Without the change to establish the clear legal jurisdiction, the state has no ability to hold perpetrators accountable for their behavior. The second aspect of the bill will enable the state to more cost-effectively manage juvenile offenders while continuing to ensure that their rights to fair hearings and due process are maintained. But it allows for telephonic participation in certain court proceedings. And Director Patty Ware and her Deputy Director Tony Newman are here, as well as Assistant Attorney General Dean Guinelli for further questions.
Thank you very much, Ms. Brakes. I sure appreciate it. Okay, questions? Representative Coghill.
Maybe this would be for either Patty Ware. It's going to go to the telephonic section on... Section 9. The right of a juvenile to be physically present. I guess what I need to know is procedurally, we have counsel for them, but what other protections do we have that a youngster is not being intimidated at that point? And I guess that's probably the only place where I struggle with telephonically. So can you tell me if there's been any protection at that point?
Through the chair, Representative Coghill, I probably should defer to Patty Ware, but it's my understanding that in these instances, it will be the court who decides whether it's in the best interest of the child to appear telephonically or not. So that would, to my understanding, that's the safeguard, but I would defer to Patty for that.
I would still like to hear that from her. And I understand intimidation goes both ways, Madam Chair. I've had to try to keep youngsters in a room before, when against their will. Yeah. And I know it can go both ways, but at this time, because things are done audibly, you can't see things, and I'd like to know how the court would view things that they hear but can't see. So maybe Patty Ware could come and help us with that.
Thank you. Okay, without further ado, Patty Ware.
Sorry for the tough question. But
Good afternoon, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, I agree with the concept. I'm just, that's probably one area of that if there's ever going to be a problem, it just seems to me that's where it's going to be. As long as the court has control over those proceedings, I'm going to be okay with it. I just probably need to hear how they thought through that process.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Patty Ware. I'm Director of the Division of Juvenile Justice in the Department of Health and Social Services. Would you like me to respond to that question first? Okay. Through the Chair, Representative Coghill, the proposed change is, in fact, not for the department to make that decision. That, in fact, will be made by the judge. I would also like to point out that there are very few hearings that we're actually talking about, because Section 9 actually specifies that for arraignment, adjudication, disposition, probation revocation, extension of jurisdiction, and waiver of jurisdiction hearings, the juvenile has the right to be physically present. Why we put this change in is that for much less substantive hearings, so say for status review hearings or for detention review hearings where both parties to the case, both the prosecution as well as the defense, have agreed ahead of time what's going to happen, the Division of Juvenile Justice is currently spending a few $100,000 a year transporting young people, as an example, from the Nome Youth Facility to a court in Kotzebue for a hearing that everybody agrees ahead of time what's going to occur. It lasts less than 5 minutes. Meanwhile, we're tying up a facility staff that could be used to appropriately maintain safety and security in a secure youth facility. So the change is at the judge's discretion. Either party, either the defense or the prosecution, can request that the judge make a ruling that this is not going to be substantively unfair to the juvenile for particular hearings.
Representative Coghill?
My expectation is they're either in custody or with counsel at that point.
Through the chair, Representative Coghill, that's correct.
Madam Chair.
Representative Gruenberg.
Mr. through the chair to Ms. Ware. You said a minute ago that these telephonic hearings, these hearings can be conducted telephonically if to do so would not, quote, be unfair to the juvenile, unquote. Those were substantially your words. Yet the test is not that. The test is on line 23, to the fair, not essential to the fair disposition of the matter. And you were focusing on unfair to the juvenile. I would feel more comfortable if the language said was not essential to the fair disposition of the matter or unfair to the juvenile.
Ms. Ware?
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, I certainly wouldn't have a problem with that proposed wording change. So unless Mr. Guanelli from the Department of Law sees something that I don't, I think that would be an acceptable.
I think Mr. Guanelli
is nodding.
Okay.
Do you want to speak before we do that? No, he's okay. I would like then to offer a conceptual amendment after the word of the matter and before the period, say, or is not essential to the fair disposition of the matter or unfair to the juvenile.
Okay. I'll object only for discussion.
Okay. Representative Coghill?
After reading this section, it looks inherent in that, and I'm trying to think of a judge that would think that a juvenile has the right to be physically present under these conditions would be inherently unfair to the juvenile. And so the fair proceeding then probably would take all parties into account. And so I personally think that a disposition of the matter is probably appropriate with the idea that the juvenile right is being described here.
May I respond? I have a specific reason for doing this. And the reason is, having represented some people and had family members in this situation, my son, particularly in dealing with, I'm going to give you a hypothetical, a young person, maybe very young, from a small village far away, because, you know, my family deals with teachers close up too, and some of these kids are fairly shy and don't speak up unless you really talk to them. For the lawyer and this client to really be able to talk, it may, in a particular case, be essential to have that face-to-face communication at even a brief hearing, because it's not just the 5 minutes in the hearing, but it's a chance that may not come along very often for the lawyer and the client to visit and talk to each other. Maybe not specifically about, well, what happened on this certain date at a certain time, but just to establish the kind of relation that is essential, maybe even more than with adults, for the lawyer and the client to direct, to have some trust in each other. And that's what I'm trying to get at. It's not just the 5 minutes, but it's the chance, particularly in the circumstance that Ms. Ware, and you know what I'm talking about, and I think you do too, having people in that, you've got some people in your district like that. And so I would hope you withdraw your objection.
Representative Kaka?
I would expect that very argument to be made by counsel. And so I would think fairness of process at this point, since the juvenile at this point has the right to either waive or not to waive personal appearance, I think that very argument should be made by counsel and not necessarily stipulated, because when you put the or in there, I think you tend to diminish the flexibility. And I personally, I'm you know, without going too deep into it, I think you've already got the idea that fairness to the individual is paramount, but the process also has to have a fairness to it. So I think if you say or to the juvenile, I think then fairness to the juvenile, it seems that outside of this language there might be another fairness standard, where I think this whole thing is intended to be fair to the juvenile.
Madam Chair,
Representative Grover?
To Representative Coghill, maybe would you feel more comfortable if instead of saying or unfair to the juvenile, we could say is not essential to the fair disposition of the matter and unfair to the juvenile? I just want to be sure that the juvenile is considered as part of this.
Well, I mean, by definition, the juvenile would be taken into consideration because the disposition of the matter, if you will, is going to directly impact the juvenile. Mm-hmm. So the matter isn't just something sitting out there in space. It's something that directly affects the juvenile, and however it's disposed of is absolutely going to impact the juvenile. So I think, by definition, you are taking into account.
Madam Chair.
Representative Gruenberg.
In dealing with young people, it's not, when the lawyer talks to the young person, it's often not just dealing with, well, you know, the fact that they were inhaling something or doing whatever the crime that's alleged here is. But what they're trying to do is to do some counseling with that individual. And the lawyer is in a unique position to have direct contact with that juvenile that other people in the system don't have. People in the detention facility don't have it. The lawyer is in a position to have some moral suasion over that juvenile that other people don't. And I'm not saying that in all cases it's necessary for the young person to be brought in, but it may be extremely helpful for that, putting that kid on the right track, to have the chance in a given case to have a few minutes with that lawyer face to face. These lawyers are usually able to talk to the juvenile and maybe talk some sense into them. And I just want that to be part of the process.
Representative Crocker?
And I agree with him. My concern was, rather than emphasizing, we were going to create an avenue for another discussion. Mm-hmm. So I think what he's want and fairness to the juvenile is just fine with me, because I was concerned that the or was going to say, okay, what else do we look for in there? And with the and, I think we're just emphasizing the fact that and fairness to the juvenile. I mean, I think that's inherent in here. And I have no problem adding language. It's extra language, but if he wants to emphasize it, that's fine with me.
I think it's extra, but if it
and this is conceptual. I just you understand.
Yeah. Okay. So that's amendment number one. Representative Coghill, do you remove your objection? Okay. Is there further objection to amendment number one?
Is it Vanessa, or
it's and.
And fairness to the juvenile conceptually, then.
Okay, so that brings the bill back. And so, Ms. Ware, did you want to testify anything further?
Well, we had a whole presentation, and it's at the will of the Madam Chair and the committee, whether you want us to go through that or you just want to entertain questions.
I think questions is the better route. And the only other person I have to testify on this bill is Josh Fink, the Office of Public Advocacy, to answer questions as well. To testify. So, questions from the committee for either Mr. Fink or Representative Gadjalstrom?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mine's more of a comment. I think the bill is good. I appreciate the comments that have been made, and I think not only are we taking into consideration what's in the best interest of the juvenile, but we're looking at the uniqueness of our state and that we have weather issues, and sometimes transporting kids back and forth, we might potentially have a juvenile stuck for 3 days somewhere. They're with one person who's supposed to monitor them 24 hours a day, and what the reality then is that back home, wherever their home is, that shelter or facility has been short-staffed. So those juveniles there are not getting the supervision or being allowed to participate in activities that they might normally do. And so really, I think it's good, and it really cleans up the system and allows us to spend more time doing the things that we hope to achieve in the system. And I agree with the intent of what Representative Grossberg's concerns were. And my thought is that it is taken care of, in the wording that's there. But by adding that in fairness, I think that clarifies it even more for some. But other than that, I think it's a very good bill.
Okay, Representative Cockhill and then Gruenberg.
I got a feeling I might see this bill again, so the next question I have is, okay, when we have a youngster who is charged with an offense that they committed at 19 or 17 and comes to the place where the charge has been filed, they're 20 years old, and they're adults. Tell me how it proceeds from there so that I'll have a practical working concept. I think I understand the language, but I need to know practically the charge, because there's plea issues, there's charging things.
Through the chair, Representative Coghill, depending on the seriousness of the crime, if in fact the juvenile were 17 years old and the allegation is that he or she committed one of the crimes that is an auto waiver offense, then if we are filing when he or she is 21 or 22, the rules related to having him or her be prosecuted in the adult system would still apply.
I wanted to hear that very clearly.
Okay.
And so that means all the rights to say charge bargain and all these different things that we hear.
It would be through the chair, Representative Cockle, it would be handled exactly as an adult case would be.
Representative Gruenberg?
Yes, Madam Chair. We have both of these cases, I can see, are frankly from Kenai. And I'm wondering if either of those cases was appealed, and if so, the results.
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, I actually don't know the answer to that. We would have to get back to you, Representative Gruenberg.
I would appreciate it if you could, Madam Chair.
Representative,
I don't know if the members of the committee want to know the answer to my question, too. If so, then does anybody else interested? I wanted to know whether these had been appealed, and if so, the results of the appeal. Anybody else interested?
Madam Chair, explain to me, the non-attorney, how that affects it.
Well, because if they did dismiss it, and the dismissal was incorrect, then I'd like to know what the current practice is, because frankly there might not be a need for this. I think that's probably a good idea, but I'd like to know what the Court of Appeals had to say, or I assume this was, yeah, these were Superior Court. They would have gone to the Court of Appeals. But I would like to know if there's a Court of Appeals opinion on that.
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, we will certainly verify that, but we've worked extensively for many, many months with Annie Carpinetti in the Department of Law, and I'm frankly relatively certain that that would have been included if, in fact, they had been appealed. We would have been including that in our testimony. We will absolutely get back and verify that with you and with the committee.
That, or anything else, even if there's an MONJ around, Memorandum Opinion and Judgment.
So go ahead, if you don't mind, and let us, the rest of the committee, know, too, so it puts our...
Absolutely.
It's that question of curiosity out of our minds. Okay, further discussion. Anybody else here in the audience that I've overlooked on Senate Bill 154? Anybody online? Okay, hearing none, we'll close public testimony. Representative Guerra.
Madam Chair, did we hear from Josh Fink, or is he just here for questions?
He's just here to answer questions. Do you want to ask?
Yeah.
Representative Guerra?
Thanks. Josh, this is Les Guerra speaking. I suppose, do you have any concerns you want us to think about on this bill? I've looked through it, and I don't, just from looking at it and from what I've heard, have great concerns, but I want to just get your sense as to whether or not I'm missing something major.
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, am I off mute? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
we don't have an official position on the bill, but there would be two things I'd like to point out. As far as the telephonic participation, for arraignment, adjudication, disposition, probation, revocation, and the other things listed there on page 6, the juvenile would have to waive his right to be present. For the detention review, the juvenile could ask to be present. His attorney could argue that. The court could still disallow it. That greatly concerns me. The detention reviews are significant reviews. They deal with the juvenile's liberty interest. The judge needs to weigh the credibility of the juvenile. The attorney needs to be there with the juvenile. So if they don't transport the juvenile, we're going to transport the attorney to where the juvenile is. And then that becomes inefficient because the attorney can't talk with the state's counsel. So I do have concerns about telephonic participation being allowed for detention reviews when the juvenile does not wish to waive. That greatly concerns me. The one other issue that I just want to point out to the committee, and again, we really don't have a position on this, but by removing Section 1, allowing prosecution of minors after they become adults for conduct they committed as a minor, allows for the prosecution of the recovered memory cases. You know, this last year in the Anchorage Press, we had one of the authors or a writer at the Press wrote a story, he's now 38, about how he was sexually abused when he was 14 in Alaska. The alleged perpetrator had to retain counsel. Under current law, a prosecution really couldn't go forward unless that was a Class A sex assault. Under this, you would be allowed to prosecute that, and I don't know how many of those we'd have, but this does open the door to the, I guess it's called the recovered memory prosecutions.
Ms. Ware, did you want to...
Madam Chair, members of the committee, certainly there are going to be opportunities for cases such as Mr. Fink is describing. I do want to point out, though, that that is, I think that those would be extreme outliers. The intent of this bill is to improve public safety in our state. We cannot have a situation where a young person commits serious offenses, and both of these cases in Kenai that you have in your packet were sex offenses, sexual abuse against a minor, sexual assault cases, and we have no ability to hold him or her accountable either in the juvenile system or the adult system. That's what the bill is intended to correct, and that's just simply not an acceptable situation in our state.
Representative Garrett?
With Mr. Fink making the comments he made and with you making the comments that those are really on the fringe of what you're trying to get done, would there be any benefit to seeing if you could work out some of his concerns overnight?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, this is the first I've heard about recovered memory concerns. So we have not given thought to that, although, as I've mentioned earlier, we have been working on this bill with law for approximately 6 months. It went from a 50-page bill down to its current form of approximately 10 pages. We have thoroughly considered a whole range of issues. Can we go back and talk to Mr. Guinelli and Ms. Carpinetti? Absolutely. And about this particular issue, we can.
Yes, Madam Chair?
Representative Kara.
Yeah.
Feel free.
Guinelli, you're here now. We want to hear your response. The problem is we're running out of time here.
I guess when you say that you worked with law, does that mean you didn't work with OPA or the PDs on the bill at all?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, the Department of Law drafted the bill. Senator Terrio was the sponsor of the bill. Did we consult with the PD's office or OPA in the drafting? No.
Guinelli?
For the record, Dean Guinelli with the Criminal Division of the Attorney General's Office. A number of years ago, the legislature changed the statute of limitations with respect to serious sex offenses to essentially remove the statute of limitations for the kinds of very rare situations that Mr. Fink was talking about, where there was a delayed memory or there's some evidence of sexual abuse that comes to light years later. That happens. It happens to particularly to children who suppress their memories because of the abuse. And so if the legislature makes a decision that for crimes committed by adults there is essentially no statute of limitations for serious sex offenses, then it seems to me that what this bill does is makes that provision that applies to adults consistent with what should apply to juveniles. Whether or not the juvenile justice system is going to be able to effectively deal with somebody who's now 20 years older, I think that remains to be seen. But at least there ought to be some way to address that situation, to at least, you know, in the rare situations where a provable case can arise, is it something that we now decide that, well, if you were 17 at the time, you know, nothing will happen to you, but if you were 18 at the time, you know, the prosecution can occur. I just think that there needs to be the same type of rules available for, you know, for these, in most cases, you know, older juveniles and to adults. So I guess that's my answer to that. It's a rare situation where those kind of cases are provable, but if they are, I think there ought to be some way to address the situation. That's my response to that, the comment about the delayed memory. Mr. Fink also mentioned something about detention reviews, and I think that, you know, there's a bill that is going through the legislature about, I think it's Representative Samuels, about, you know, these constant revolving door bail reviews in adult criminal matters. And I think that the same kind of thing can happen in juvenile cases. And to require the department to then, you know, transport the juvenile every time when there may be, again, no new information. Mr. Fink indicated that, you know, if the, you know, juvenile wants to testify, he ought to be present. I think that's the kind of situation that the judge ought to take into consideration in terms of reaching a fair disposition of the matter, and most judges would. But I think the fact of the matter is, in most detention reviews, the juvenile isn't going to get on the stand. They aren't likely to be able to provide any additional information. It's, you know, the issue is going to be, is there a third party custodian? Is there somebody responsible in the family or the community who can take care of that? And that's not something that the juvenile necessarily needs to be present for. You know, I think that if there is some new information, if it is an important proceeding, and in fairness to the disposition, I think the judge is gonna allow it. But I think for the repeated situation, I think it's not necessary in a lot of circumstances.
If nothing else, we've made it clear, I think, in our language by adding "and the juvenile," fairness and to the juvenile. I think if anything, we've sent a maybe even a stronger message of legislative intent. Okay, further.
Madam Chair, might I, for just one moment, Tony just reminded me, in response to Representative Guerra's earlier question, as the bill was moving through the other body, we did, in fact, talk with Linda Wilson from the Public Defender's Office, who had expressed concern particularly about the lack of inclusion of arraignment hearings in the telephonic version of the bill, and that was added in Senate Judiciary, I believe it was, in terms of one of the amendments.
Representative Guerra and then Gruenberg?
Yeah, I just have one fiscal concern still. So Mr. Fink said that if you don't bring the juvenile to the attorney for some of these for a detainment-related hearing, that the attorney might therefore have to go visit the juvenile. And so we always face this issue of trying to get OPA and the public defenders by within the budgetary constraints that they have. And I guess, why should I not be concerned about that?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, that question was also asked in Senate Judiciary. Linda Wilson was online testifying at the time. I believe the question essentially was, would the public defender then need to be physically present at every one of these hearings that we're talking about could be covered under this proposed delinquency rule change? I don't want to speak for Linda. She's not online, but I believe it's fair to say that her answer was, well, in those types of hearings that are like the trial call where everybody's coming up and you're doing these quick type of reviews, no, they would not spend the money to send the attorney to be physically present with that young person. I would be much more comfortable if the public defender's office were here to answer that question themselves. It's certainly not the department's of Health and Social Services intent to transfer costs to another entity. And I guess the only other thing I would add, Representative Guerra, is that the department would not be requesting a telephonic hearing if there were any contested issue at all. That's not the intent of this bill. The intent of this particular change is to have a mechanism such that the judge can make that determination as to whether this is one of those times where it is not a substantive issue and would not warrant the expense.
This applies to trial call, too?
Through the chair, Representative Gere, I may have used the wrong term. I believe that that was the question that came up, and I don't know if I can.
Through the chair, I think that something like trial call, a scheduling proceeding,
right,
would be the type of, precisely the type of proceeding where the juvenile would not necessarily need to be present, and the scheduling of those matters is usually something worked out, you know, between the attorneys, ordinarily. Now, there may be some disputes about that, but is a juvenile's presence going to be necessary for a fair disposition of that? I would think it would be a rare case, and in those cases where it is, then the judge is going to order it.
Representative Guerra?
I'm sorry, but this is a very serious matter, I think. Trial call, just so you know, is in many cases, it's the Friday before the Monday that trial is going to start. In some cases, unfortunately, the attorney and the client have not really met very much before that date, especially in cases that involve public representation where you don't have a private attorney with a smaller caseload. The personal contact can be very important 3 days before a trial if we're talking about the same proceeding. And that's usually what trial call is. And what I'm worried about is that we're going to have this rule that says you're not going to bring the client to see to a place where the attorney is going to be, and that therefore the OPA or the PDs are going to have to spend money to send the attorney to see the client, which is going to be a bad use of scarce resources. And I guess I have some concern about this. Unless somebody can allay that concern, I think the trial call meeting is an important one for a defendant who is potentially going to start trial that next Monday.
Madam Chair, if I could just briefly respond to that. Trial call on Friday afternoon is something that's routine in you know, both juvenile and adult proceedings. If the juvenile has been transported from another location to that trial call, what's ordinarily going to happen is as soon as that hearing is over, the juvenile is going to be transported back, and the attorney will have had a few minutes to talk to the juvenile, and if they really want contact with juvenile to prepare for trial that's going to be occurring the following week, some other arrangements need to be made. They need to go to where the juvenile is, or make some other arrangements to have the judge order that the juvenile be held in that location. I don't think that we can construct a system whereby the Department of Health and Social Services is responsible for transporting juveniles to a lot of routine hearings for a short period of time, simply because, and the only reason that I've heard is so the public defender can have a few minutes to spend with that juvenile. If there is a responsibility to adequately represent that client, then the public defender agency and the Office of Public Advocate have got to make arrangements to do that. And whether they do that on their own nickel or whether they convince the judge that it's necessary to do that, I don't think that a lot of routine transportation for a short period of time is going to get us to the point where they are in a position to render effective assistance of counsel. That's not the purpose of transporting the juveniles.
Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let us say, for the purpose of discussion, somebody commits a robbery or something like that shortly before they're 18, and then they go outside and rob again and are caught, and they're put in jail outside, and it's a while before they could be brought back for proceedings here, and I assume that would be under this legislation. I guess I'm kind of asking Mr. Guarnelli, although Ms. Ware through the chair, that what they would be then would be convicted of delinquency under this act. How long would their sentence be? Would it be for, because they'd be, by the time they got out in Washington State or wherever, came back for trial, I assume that they would be well past the age of 19. How long would they be incarcerated? How would that work?
Sure. The scenario is that someone commits an offense in another state.
Say in Alaska.
In Alaska.
And leaves, not caught, and then they commit an offense in another state shortly thereafter, and they're caught and incarcerated. And it's a while before they're brought back for trial.
I think that whatever the reason for the delay, whether it's that they skipped the state and went somewhere, or they committed a crime in another state and were held against their will and imprisoned there, there are going to be a few cases where a few years later that person is discovered, and I think that the department has got it's got some difficult choices to make. I think the situation that you gave of a robbery is, I mean, that's an automatically waivable offense, so it's something less. It's probably going to be a residential burglary.
Sure.
I think the department has got to decide, if that person spent some time in another state and maybe is still on adult probation, does the department really want to pursue that matter? I mean, I think that threshold decision has got to be made. I mean, is there something that they can do within the juvenile justice system that isn't already being done somewhere else? So I think that's the threshold decision. And if there's the decision that, yes, there is something additional that can be done, perhaps simply a matter of a restitution order. I mean, this is someone who is an adult now. I think just an adjudication just for purposes of victim restitution is worthwhile. And I think it's worth pursuing, or at least worth giving the department the authority to think about that as an available remedy. So that's the kind of analysis that I think would take place.
But
Representative Gruenberg, and wrap up?
This is just a question here.
I've got to get to Hess. So.
Oh, you do?
Yes.
Okay. Well, no, that's
if
fine.
It's something that'll change it. I don't mind
No, I'm not offering an amendment. I was just curious how this would work.
Okay. Are there any amendments to Senate Bill 154?
I have one that
Well, may I ask while we're getting that, if the person is past the age of 19, would there even be any jurisdiction to order restitution?
The chair, I think that's what this bill would provide. It would specifically provide that.
Where does it say that?
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, I believe that Section 7 speaks to the court's jurisdiction to adjudicate and dispose of the matter as provided in the rest of Title 47. And so, as Dean Guarnelli said, the bill gives us a range of options within the department, including dual sentencing. Essentially, this new class of offenders, based on their age, we as a Department of Health and Social Services would have the same range of options in terms of the various types of orders that we have under existing statutes for kids under the age of 18. And then I do want to say to the committee, it's not the intention of the department to either be supervising adult offenders with juvenile probation officers or incarcerating adult offenders in juvenile facilities. We've talked to the Department of Corrections, and for these cases, in those instances, we'd be working with DOC.
Let me ask one more question. That being the case, because in my family situation, this is coming up, what we talked about, not a problem, but do we need any kind of a statutory change to specifically allow DOC people to do that under Title 33?
through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, I don't believe so. There are various references in this bill as an example.
I know there are, but I'm just wondering, you're quite sure we don't need to have a conforming amendment in Title 30?
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, I'm quite certain.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, so we've got amendment number one before us. Representative Guerra, you want to move your amendment?
Sure. Move amendment number one.
Okay, and I'll object just to hear. I know your reasoning, and I think everyone heard your reasoning. Does the, I guess it would be the, well, first of all, does the Department of Juvenile Justice object?
After matter, hold on, and personal contact between counsel.
Do you understand the point?
Madam Chair, since the decision is up to the judge, I think that change is perfectly acceptable.
I would just make an amendment to the amendment because we've already amended it, so it would say line 23 after and unfair to the juvenile, so it would actually be after juvenile.
This is conceptual, I assume.
Yeah. Remember, Representative Guerra, we amended line 23 to say that if the juvenile's personal appearance is not essential to the fair disposition of the matter and unfair to the juvenile. So that was Max's amendment. So actually, this is amendment number two. My apologies. So in quotations, line 23 after juvenile, period.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I guess given that, I think the draft will probably have to massage these words and Representative Gruenberg's words together.
Is there discussion on amendment number two?
It says amendment number one. I guess it should say amendment number two.
Yeah.
Just a technical thing.
And
personal contact between counsel and juvenile is not needed for case preparation.
Or arraignment disposition, however, and all
accrued. We don't want to be ungrammatical here.
Is correct.
Yeah. Is not needed. Okay. We hope the drafter will also consult the grammar dictionary and let us know any spelling or any grammatical problems. Okay, I removed my objection to amendment number two. I think that's important. Anybody, any further objection? Okay, hearing none, amendment number two carries. Any further amendments to CS for Senate Bill number 154? Okay, hearing none, Representative Dahlstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move the CS for Senate Bill 154 with
Okay, any objection to that motion? Hearing none, Senate Bill 154 is moved, and we will stand in recess.